get right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to a very special Thanksgiving edition of Before You Bet, airing live right now on the Covers YouTube and X channels. If you're watching on YouTube right now, smash that like and that subscribe button right down there. So, hey, great big show planned for you guys today. One of the best traditions in all of sports, Thanksgiving NFL football. Myself and Jingles are going to be all over the three games. We have two bets for each of these games for a total of 12 total bets, spreads, totals, props, touchdown scores, a little bit of everything, a big time mixed bag for you guys. So he'll be along in a matter of seconds. Then in the second segment of the show, Jake Butt will be here. We'll get his thoughts on some of these NFL Thanksgiving Day games as well. It is a massive weekend in college football. He, of course, is a former Michigan Wolverine. They're in kind of a big game at Ohio State here this weekend. So we'll get his thoughts on that matchup and that rivalry in general. He'll have some great insights for us today. So an active live chat here already. A NASCAR expert says, happy Thanksgiving to all. Pumpkin pie, better than all other pies. It's up there. I'd say it's in my top three. I like coconut cream pie best myself. If you guys want to participate in the show today, very easy to do so. Hit up that live chat on YouTube, on X. What is your best bet of the day for these NFL Thanksgiving Day games? Let us know, and we will read a few off throughout the course of the program. Okay, let's go to our guy who covers NFL betting here with me on the show, the man with the sexiest smile in sports betting. Jingles, what's up, buddy? How we doing?
It's a wild day. It's already, you know what I mean? Up early, it's got a different feel to it. I love the 12:30 start as opposed to the 1. Anytime I can get it a little earlier. I mean, the NHL's smart. They're like, nope, let's just focus on this. NBA as well. So it's all eyes on football today. And, I mean, who isn't excited about Giants and Dallas? Like, when we can that game exciting, life is okay.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that game has the potential to be so bad that it might be good. A couple block kicks, some fumble returns for touchdowns, like that type of thing going on. Yeah. And it's funny, John Middlecoff pointed this out a couple weeks ago on the show. Like, we don't care how bad these NFL games are. We will complain about it. We will watch them anyways. They could be giving us Raiders Titans today, and people are going to tune in. We'll do a record number, better numbers than an NBA Finals game, for God's sakes. We love it. NFL, Thanksgiving, one of the greatest traditions in all of sports. A couple of the guys weighing in the live chat with their best bets. Alec Pierce likes Gibbs 100-plus scrimmage yards. I hope you're right about that. More about that one in a second. He also likes Jameson Williams to get into the end zone. Lions ATS should be money, says David. And David also asking, drink of choice on Thanksgiving. I was thinking of that yesterday. Like, we talk about all the Thanksgiving foods and everyone's got their opinions and takes. I don't think that there's an official Thanksgiving drink. Like, at Christmas, you have the eggnog and spice rum. You don't really have something like that. Someone should, some marketing company, someone should try to make themselves the official beverage.
The official drink of Thanksgiving. They should sponsor it out.
Yeah, good old-fashioned beer. That's what I will be going with. Okay, we got a lot to get into here, an absolute avalanche. I think some really good-looking betting spots on the boards here today. So let's get into them. Let's start in Detroit. The Lions as a big favorite playing host to the Chicago Bears. I'm not scared of that big number. Give me the Lions to cover as a 9.5-point favorite, baby. Let's get right into it. So the Bears' defense is getting killed here, guys. Dead last in yards allowed per play over their last three games. You might be thinking, well, their final scores have been close. Yeah, they have been, but they're lucky that they're not getting boat raced. They allowed 8.5 yards per play to the Packers 2 weeks ago and somehow only allowed 20 points in that game. I don't think they're going to be lucky against the Lions, who ranked top three in yards per play for the season and over the last three games. Lions just casually averaging 37.6 points per game on their home field. Some might think, we keep trying to guess, when's the letdown spot coming for the Lions? I don't think it's coming in this game here on their home field on Thanksgiving. They had a bad game in this game last season on their home field against the Packers. I think that's going to be top of mind in their prep coming into this game. I think they're going to look to put on a little bit of a show here for the home fans. And we talk, hey, this is a big number, big spread. It was at 10 and a half earlier in the week. It's been bet down to 9.5. Don't be scared of the big number. The last times, the Lions were a big favorite this season. Wins of 46 points and 38 points, for God's sake. So, yeah, I'm not scared of the line moving, not scared of the big number. Give me the Lions to take care of business, -9.5. Okay, Jingles, your first bet for this game, Roschon Johnson. What do you like for him?
I think this is like the third time I've brought Roschon onto the show. He's cashed one time, but there's a resurgence with old Roschon here in the backfield. It's not going to be volume. You need to get him in the red zone. But with new offensive coordinator Thomas Brown, Roschon's seen his role increase. He's got touchdowns in back-to-back weeks. The market is going up, which is not always the greatest thing. This opened at 200, but plus 270 is a big number for a guy who could get all the red zone touches in this game. DeAndre Swift over the last 2 weeks, one red zone carry. If his snap share, wild. It's gone from like 19 snaps in the Shane Waldron game last game to 30 and 29 with Thomas Brown in there. There's a lot to like. Chicago, 72% touchdown red zone percentage on the road. That's surprising. Obviously a tough matchup, but I mean, Detroit banged up defense, plus 270 in a game that, yes, I do like the over 47.5. Indoor game, 47.5, somehow the same price as the Miami-Green Bay game in Lambeau. So I'll take the over 47.5 too. But give me some plus 270 TD from the red zone back in Chicago.
Let's go. Okay, Jahmyr Gibbs, I like him to be heavily involved in the game today. I'm going to take him to go over his rushing yard total of 72.5 yards. So look what he's done over his last 10 games. He's averaging 84.6 rushing yards. He has a very high ceiling, multiple games where he's got the triple digits. In terms of rushing yards, the Bears stink against the run here, guys. They're 26 in yards per rush attempt allowed. We saw Aaron Jones go for 106 against them last week. And a little bit of guesswork here. I think Gibbs, the potential that he could be in line for more work here. Montgomery is banged up. He missed the entire fourth quarter last week. That led to Gibbs having a season-high 21 carries. Now, Montgomery expected to play, but maybe Gibbs gets an extra series or two, and that might be the difference between him going over this number. So we'll take him to go over 72.5 rushing yards. Okay, Jingle's final pick for this game. Then on to the others, Keenan Allen. What do you like for him?
Just to touch on Chris McCauley's point, plus 160. If he's talking about the TD for Roschon, I'm off at that number. I think my buy point's around 200. 160, not somewhere where I want to buy that. Keenan Allen, I'm buying. Maybe it's not the greatest number because he's only gone over it once and it was last week. It's very recency bias, but the aggregates within this are really nice. It's an indoor game. They're a giant dog. And we've seen Caleb Williams look very decent over the last 2 weeks under the new offensive coordinator. The scheming hasn't really changed. The pass rate hasn't changed. He's just looked more effective and he's gotten Keenan Allen involved a lot more. He led all receivers in targets last week. He's not breaking them for big gains, but with volume, he can get to this number. His reception total sitting at 4.5, -17 to the over, projecting for around over 5 catches like this spot. And he leads all Chicago wide receivers in targets per route run at 24%, so somewhat close to a target share. This is a Keenan Allen game. We saw him get trusted in very key downs and third downs with Caleb Williams starting to get a little more love for him. So 50 yards, that's where I'm going with that. He's not a guy I want to ladder just because he's not the DJ Moore type. He's not the Roma Dunze type, but he's going to get his volume. So it's the safest of the three.
Okay, on to game number two. Looks like an ugly one. My best bet for this game is an ugly one. You have to plug your nose and hit the button on this one if you want a tail. I'm going to take the Giants to go over their team total. Really low number here of 16.5. And this is primarily a fade of the Cowboys defense. On their home field, this is getting out of hand. They have allowed an average of 39.1 points per game over their last 6 home games. This includes 3 separate instances of an opponent scoring 44 or more points and no fewer than 28 points scored against them in that 6-game span. I don't think the Giants are going to get into the 40s here. Now, here's the thing with the Giants. Their offense is absolutely pathetic on their home field. They're averaging just 10 points per game. On the road, though, a different story. They averaged 20.6 points per game on the road. They have gone over this number of 16.5 in all of their road games this season. And then you look at the situation here for the Giants. It's not going very well. You have people coaching for their jobs. Brian Daboll, specifically, he is an offensive-minded head coach. He was embarrassed last week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I don't think this is a situation of the players quitting on their coach. He came out after that game and he said the effort was there for the players. He kind of stood up for them a little bit. He maybe threw himself under the bus a little bit. So I think there's going to be a max effort from everybody involved on the Giants side, and they'll be able to go over that number of 16.5. Jingle, similar bet to you.
This is shaping up to be funny where we're both on the over for these two horrible offenses, but they're equally bad defenses. That's a lot of this. I know defense can be noisy, but indoors, again, at home, fast track, Dallas team total over 20.5. On the road versus Washington. Last week, they put up a lot of points, but the offense put up 20 points themselves. But yes, Cooper Rush is not a great quarterback. Okay? He does have some starts. He's competent. He'll get to 200 passing yards, I think. But this Giants rush defense is one of the worst in all of football. 4.9 yards per carry last week. Everybody who had a carry for Tampa Bay had a touchdown. 4 rushing touchdowns allowed. Cooper Rush doesn't have to do a whole lot. And on the other side, I mean, the Giants offense could be given Dallas a lot of possessions here. Third quarterback in 3 weeks. Brian Daboll somehow might give fewer touches to his best offensive weapon in Tyrone Tracy after fumbles in back-to-back games. And just the play calling, just the absolute play calling in New York needs to be on high alert. Daboll just continues to get in his own way. And I said it when I was watching the game when they pulled that dumb play, splitting DeVito out wide. Like, he's trying to get fired. He looked like he was trying to get fired. Like, just run your offense. You don't have to get gimmicky, but we've seen it consistently, and that could give the ball to Dallas in a few nice spots.
Yeah, it did look like an example of intentional tanking from the Giants there last week. So hopefully we don't see that carry over into this game. Okay, my favorite prop for this game, Tyrone Tracy Jr. I like him to go over his receiving yard total of 10.5 yards. So I faded the Cowboys in the spot plenty this season. Joe Mixon a couple of weeks ago, he went over it. The reason I like the spot for Tracy is because the Cowboys struggle against running backs in the pass game. They're allowing 38.2 receiving yards to running backs per game, over 10 yards allowed per catch as well. He has had success in the pass game when given opportunities. Last week, he had 28 receiving yards off of 4 catches, 4 targets. He had a 6-catch game where he had 57 yards against the Bengals earlier in the season. And when he did play Dallas, for what it's worth, earlier in the season, he had a 19-yard catch. And I think he should have a much heavier workload in this game. So his snaps were down significantly last week, just 24. That's what happens to running backs when your team is losing 23-0. The game prior to that, he was on the field for 60 snaps, 43 more than Devin Singletary, by the way. So it looks like Tracy, the lead guy here in the Giants backfield. Similar bets, kind of. Again, you like a running back on the other side here. Rico, what are we looking at?
I just like anybody who your backup is Ezekiel Elliott. It's just, yeah, it's, I don't like talent. I think opportunity outweighs talent in all of these situations, especially with an offense that doesn't have a great quarterback, is going to rely on the run game, and has a great matchup versus a bad rush defense in the Giants. Rico, 22 of 26 running back opportunities last week and took all the red zone work. Those are a lot of checks for a plus 110 TD. I get it that it's a low total game. I get it that the team total is at 20.5. But for a back to get, let's say, 80% of the work, all the red zone, touchdown prices should be around like minus 120, minus 125. You should have to pay a little tax on it. Not so much here with Rico Dowdle, who, I mean, this is the same price as some receivers out there, guys like Nico Collins and AJ Brown. But 0 TDs on 112 carries. That is a wild number, and it's going to change this week, I think, just in the spot. Projects for 15.5 carries, so volume's there. He's just going to find the end zone. It's not okay. Cooper Rush isn't going to take over this game and start slinging it. They're going to, when they get down, it's going to be a slow, let's run the ball, let's not get too creative with a quarterback in Cooper Rush.
Okay, on to game number three, the best-looking game of the day. I think that's fair to say. You see the Dolphins hat behind me here. Miami hoping to change some narratives. We saw that with Tua in the post-game press conference after last week's game against the Patriots. Do I expect
Have you been on defense all week? Sorry, Joe. Have you been defense on all week about Tua and cold weather and facing bad teams?
Not really. I do think the cold weather thing is overstated. Like, people fail to like the games that stick out. The game when they went into Kansas City in the playoff game last year. That was like record cold temperatures. Like, there's not a lot of teams that are going to have a lot of success in that situation. Against the team that went on to win the Super Bowl, too, by the way, on their home field. And some context, the Dolphins were beat to shit. A lot of injuries in that game. So, yeah, it is an issue, but I do think it is overstated. Like, okay, they're getting beat by elite teams when they go on the road for these cold weather games. It's not like they're going up to New York and the Giants are boat racing them, for example. Then, okay, that's a significant issue. So, it is something that they do have to overcome. It's a problem they know about. It's a problem that odds makers know about, too. I think it's incorporated into these numbers here for the game. Do I think Miami's going to change some narratives? Probably not. I've seen this movie. I've been a Dolphins fan my whole life, guys. This movie plenty of times during the Mike McDaniel era, too. You know, they get some buzz going. You know, you get some people behind them. They're playing well against a lot of bad teams. I've seen it all. I had this feeling, though, this morning, Jingles, where I'll get to the picks here in a second, where I thought, as a Dolphins fan, wouldn't it be nice to watch my team in a standalone primetime game have this great performance and no one really expects it? You know, they beat the Rams on Monday Night Football a couple of weeks ago. That was just a really sloppy game. So, we'll see. My hopes aren't high for a Dolphins win, but my hopes are high for this game to go over the total of 47 and a half yards. So this Dolphins offense, obviously a lot different with Tua back. Their games are averaging 50.4 combined points since his return. Four of those five games did go over this number of 47 and a half. Miami's defense, some people pointing to some improvements there. Yeah, it's true, but they've had it really easy. Like, let's not go crazy about the Dolphins defense having good performances against the Patriots and Raiders and Anthony Richardson earlier in the season. The few times they have played really good offenses, they've gotten lit up by them for the most part. The Bills dropped 30 on them twice. Kyler Murray came into town and dropped 28 points on them. Of course, the Packers are really efficient at moving the football fourth in yards per play in the NFL. And potential for both teams to have some explosive plays here. Packers are tied for the most pass plays at 40-plus yards, despite Love missing a couple of games. The Dolphins have hit some big ones since Tua has come back, so we'll go over 47 and a half. One of your favorite props, you have two, Jordan Love.
Yeah, we are on some blitz plays here, basically. Jordan Love under 6.5 rushing yards. Excuse me, minus 120. This number's in a weird no man's land. If you bet quarterback rushing yards for lower guys like the Goffs, like the Staffords, like they're guys that are set at like 1.5 and 2.5, or it goes to like 12.5. 6.5 is a weird, vulnerable number that's starting to get some love to the under. We're seeing some 5.5s out there. He's 4-1 to the under in his last five games. Miami isn't a very big pressure defense, so it should keep him in the pocket. And in this spot, Love. Kneel down equity. Usually I talk about that in terms of gaining carries. Kneel down equity in this spot. If he's at two victory formations, and that goes some under. Maybe we can get some crazy magic like we saw in college football this weekend where guys are running out of the back of the end zone for the safeties. Just some magic. So 6.5 on the under. Guy doesn't run much. There's a few sneaky outs in the back door there with the victory formations, but this is a guy who predominantly hasn't run much.
Okay, two more, and then Jake Butt will be here to discuss some college football and some NFL stuff as well. Okay, my favorite prop for this game, Jordan Love, longest completion over 37.5 yards. I absolutely love this bet. This has been light work for Love here this season. He has topped this number in 7 of the 9 games that he's played in. He should have topped it last week, but Christian Watson dropped a ball that most high school receivers would have taken to the house. He takes a lot of big shots. He ranks fourth in pass attempts at 40 or more air yards, and that's despite him missing some time. The Packers are tied for the most pass plays of 40-plus yards this season. And like I kind of talked about in my pick for the over, the Dolphins' defense is kind of hard to judge. Yes, they've had some pretty good performances versus bad teams, but we've seen some teams break some big plays against them. Kyler Murray had a 37-yard pass against them. Josh Allen had a 44. Drake May had a 38 last week. Geno Smith had a 71-yarder earlier in the season. So I think we'll see that pattern continue, and hopefully that will contribute to the over here tonight. Okay, final pick, Jingles, for the Thanksgiving Day games. What are we looking at for your favorite or one of your favorite props?
We also, getting back to your Dolphins, it was, like, Tua's starting to look downfield now a bit more. Like, we were talking, like, pre-concussion, like, it was dink and dunk town for that offense. Now we're starting to see him open it up. I don't know if that has a lot to do with putting Jonnu Smith in a significant role, but this guy does not have a significant role, and that's Odell Beckham. He is a man who is not seeing the field much. Like, his snap count is like 12, 13, 10, 10. Maybe he's the number 5 or 6 passing option. He's playing behind Malik Washington. Jonnu Smith rolls up. You can't put him at anything better than 5 in this offense. So it goes to this. So we released the under 15.5 yards on the blitz. And as always, the yardage will move quickly, and then the reception total will move a little slower. So under 1.5 receptions on this spot. It's not the funnest bet for a nightcap, watching people not get, but cheering for someone who's not on the field and not be able to get a catch, that's the best way to do it. And you've been watching a lot of your Dolphins, and I don't think you've come away saying, oh, that Odell Beckham Jr., he's really making this offense better week by week.
What I noticed about Odell Beckham is he'll get a catch occasionally, and he pops up if it's a first down. He does the crazy thing as if, like, you know, you scored the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. So good for him. You know, he's got to allow himself to be seen out there, I guess. So, you know, hopefully he can contribute here tonight. Not too much, though. How about one big pass catch for a touchdown? And then, you know, we can both be happy, right?
I wonder what off the top of your head, what would you have to get Odell Beckham Jr. touchdown?
5-1.
Oh, jeepers. Oh, he's way down there. Yep. Plus 650. So no, I'm not running out to get that, but no, I do like some deep shots. I do like Miami throwing the ball a lot better. Let's go more Jonnu Smith. It's amazing. Like, Jonnu Smith every week, like, his market keeps going up. The books keep catching up to it, but he's still going over his receiving yards every week.
Indeed. Okay, buddy. We will leave it at that. You're going to be right back with us tomorrow, though. Black Friday. Some looks for that. The usual avalanche of picks for the NFL Sunday game. So, Jingles, thanks for joining. Best of luck with your bets, and we will catch you again tomorrow.
Enjoy your holiday Thursday. Happy Thanksgiving. Good luck with your bets. Take care.
Yes, sir. Okay. From the NFL to college football, then a little bit more NFL, a big day for the National Football League. Let's now discuss all of it with a guy, analyst at the Big Ten Network, former Michigan Wolverine. They're playing a big game this weekend. Jake Butt. Jake, how are we making out?
Man, I'm doing great, Joe. Great to see you, man. Happy Thanksgiving. What a great day this is. So many great games on the schedule, and it's rivalry week in college football. So I'm fired up.
Okay. Let's start with college football. We're going to spend some time with this Michigan-Ohio State game. Then we'll circle back and discuss the Thanksgiving Day games here today and something else for the NFL that I want to throw at you. So like we've been doing the past couple weeks on your appearances here, let's start by talking about the latest rankings. What do you love? What do you hate? Any criticisms here with the rankings that came out the other day?
No, I don't have too many criticisms with the current rankings, but what's happened is last weekend was a really interesting weekend. So Indiana goes into Columbus and they lose. And of course, that's what we've been talking about for a while now. Wow, Indiana, the one time they play a capable team, they lose. And all of a sudden, you can see the narratives forming to get more and more SEC teams in. And then the SEC lays an egg. Alabama lays an egg, right? And now all of a sudden, I think there we have complete, we don't have a clue what's going to happen in these rankings. The big issue and my big point here is people are trying to set up a chance for Indiana to get jumped. Okay, they play Purdue this weekend. Purdue, not very good. Indiana's going to handle business. All good. I've heard the team Clemson getting thrown out. How can we have Clemson in there when they got steamrolled even worse by Georgia when they played them? Alabama is another team. Like, I can't see this, Joe, because there's really no team that's without flaws this season. And Indiana's loss to Ohio State was more about Ohio State playing to their standard. No team's beating that Buckeye team if they play to that standard last weekend. So at this point, my big takeaway, my big emphasis is that Indiana's done enough to get in.
Okay, so I want to talk about Alabama here. So a big talking point is, can a three-loss SEC team get into the 12-team playoff? And, you know, there's some politics at play here. I think it's fair to say that they're better than a lot of non-SEC schools that would get in here potentially. It will be good for business if Alabama is in these big games, right, for the casual viewer out there. They're plus 250 to get in. They do have three losses here, but do you think things could break their way if they have a great performance versus Auburn here this weekend? They're favored by 11.5 points. Do you think they have a shot to get in?
They always have a shot, but I don't think it's the likely scenario, and they've done it to themselves at this point. I mean, part of this is we're talking about hypothetical matchups. Like, hey, Alabama would hypothetically beat blank team from the Big 12 or the ACC or even Indiana. They were hypothetically favored against Oklahoma in what happened. They were hypothetically favored against Vanderbilt in what happened. They have done this to themselves. They have proven that they have flaws. Again, like the team that gets talked about here would be Indiana. What happened when Indiana, I look at Nebraska, okay, as a similar opponent to an Oklahoma or Vanderbilt. Indiana steamrolled Nebraska. They've steamrolled everyone on their schedule. At this point, Alabama has put themselves in this exact position. In order for them to get in, I think they would need a massive, massive victory. And then they would need some teams to go down and lose. They would need help from other teams.
Okay, let's spend some time talking at Michigan-Ohio State, a game that you've played in four times, a couple of close losses. We will leave it at that. So this year's game going down in Columbus, Ohio State favored by 19.5 points. Before we get into some analysis for the game, tell us a little bit about your story here. So you're from the Columbus region. Yeah. I believe, and you ended up playing for the arch rival Michigan. Tell us how this came to be.
Yeah, so I grew up in Columbus. I grew up a diehard Buckeye fan, and my hometown is Pickerington. It was 10 minutes away from campus, and I was getting offers from everybody. At one point, I was like a top-rated defensive end and tight end in college football. I'm getting offers from everybody except for Ohio State. What's really interesting is each team has a director of recruiting. Ohio State's director of recruiting, his son was in my grade. So I've went from elementary, middle, junior high, and all the way through high school with his son. So I'm right there in the backyard, and Ohio State does not offer me. So I end up going to Michigan, and the fun part is in fifth grade, Ohio State's director of recruiting came, and it was career day. And he spoke to our class about what it's like to be a professional. And I wrote him a note, and I said, "Hey, Mr. Gillum, thank you for talking to us. I know one day I want to be a football player." Okay, that was in 2007. End up going to Michigan, end up getting drafted in 2017. I get a knock on my door the day after I'm getting drafted, and Mr. Gillum had kept that letter and handed it to me as a gift. Really cool story. The other thing is I end up going to Michigan. I win the John Mackey Award. Urban Meyer was the coach that didn't offer me. Never beat him, okay? So it was, as you mentioned, there were some frustrating losses. 2016 was my senior year. It was the JT was short game. Well, I win the John Mackey in 2016. So I go to the College Football Awards show. That's in December after this game. That's Thursday night. Friday morning, we're told to be in the lobby at 7 a.m. to catch a ride to the airport. I get there at like 6:30. It was early enough where there was only two other people in the lobby. There was the clerk behind the desk, and there's Urban Meyer across the way. So it's me and Urban after this big win or after this big loss. He didn't offer me, so I say, "Hey, coach, how's it going?" And I'm fuming. I just don't like the guy. And he walks over right and puts his face in my chest. And he looks at me and he says, "Why didn't you come to Ohio State?" And I was like, Coach, like, what do you mean? You didn't offer me. He's like, what was it? Were you a bad – did you get in trouble? I'm like, never. He's like, were you a bad student? I'm like, man, I got into Michigan. He's like, listen, you're a hell of a player. Like, I wish you the best. You'll have a great career. And it was a full circle moment that I would have traded that for a win. But, you know, obviously, you know, careers are defined by this game, basically, Joe. I mean, look at Ryan Day, how successful he's been. Yeah. His winning percentage is as good as it gets. His ability to recruit, everything. But he hasn't been able to consistently beat Michigan. He did it in 2019, his first year, and then lost three straight. Careers are defined by this game. I've heard it where even Urban Meyer said this. He'd rather lose every other game on his schedule and beat his rival than the opposite. Okay. That speaks to the importance of this game.
Okay. So growing up in Columbus, I'd imagine you have a lot of Ohio State fans in your life. So did you playing for Michigan lead to some interesting interactions when you would return back home?
Well, for the most part, I got a good circle of people that are full of really good people around me. But my mom's one of 16 and my dad's one of 8. I got a gigantic family.
Wow.
When I went to Michigan, I won't name him, but one of my uncles on my mom's side emailed my dad and said, how could you ever do this? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, how could you ever go to Michigan, basically?
Wow.
Which is a lunatic thing to do, you know, because it's like, my dad's like, listen, at that point, I didn't know if I was going to go to the NFL. Michigan's a great academic school, great network, like, and Ohio State didn't offer me. So why would I be loyal? Anyways, I got married last April. That uncle had done that time and time again, emailing my dad, just being a complete and utter asshole. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on here. A-hole.
That's fine.
He's the only uncle that didn't come to my wedding. So it's a full that speaks to this rivalry.
That's pretty intense. Yeah.
Holy shit. What are we doing here? So that's a little peel back the curtains a little bit. Aside from that, my whole family converted to Michigan fans.
Okay. So the game itself, people, football players, sports, you know, whatever, people talk about games that you circle on the calendar. How is the prep for this game different? Is the pressure insane? And is there actual hatred when you're going up against each other on the football field?
This is like, it's a spiritual experience. It's a psychedelic experience. And I mean that, like, you know, practice that week. When I'm a true freshman, I'm 18 years old and I'm warming up and it's cold because it's late November. My coach at the time, Brady Hill, comes and whispered in my ear. He said, hey, remember, they didn't want you. Okay, they didn't think you were good enough. And at that point, like, I remember all practice the entire week, there I never got tired, because as soon as I got tired, I thought about how my hometown team didn't want me, didn't think I was good enough. You're like tapping into the ether. You had a pool of unlimited energy. Then you get to the game and you're playing in front of 100,000 plus. Michigan, it's 110,000 plus, and you're down in the stadium. And then there's 10 million to 20 million watching at home. And yet it was quiet, you know, like the noise didn't matter. My vision, I could see like every atom on the ball when it was spiraling towards me. I just say that because it was, all your senses were turned up. It was seriously like a psychedelic spiritual experience. You knew every play felt like it held like the whole gravity of the solar system in it. And you throw out the records too. I mean, this game, Ohio State is a huge favorite in this. My freshman year in 2013, they were the number 3 team in the country. We were like 6-5 at the time, or 5. We were not good. And it came down to the wire, 42-41. There's an ability where coaches, you turn into something else. And sometimes that favors you. Sometimes that works against you, just because of the gravity of these games. It's what makes it different. When you ask me about respect, I'll say this. Michigan and Michigan State, that is the rivalry full of hatred. That's the rivalry where, you know, things are happening underneath the pile. Michigan, Ohio State, there's mutual respect. Even Woody Hayes, he had a great quote where he said, listen, you basically, you know, the field is the field and you want to win. But Woody Hayes says, as he told his Buckeye teams, if your car breaks down and you ever need someone to help you out, call a Michigan guy. They'll come and take care of you. And I know that's the same thing. The opposite is true as well. I respect the Buckeyes and have some great friends on their team.
Nice. Okay, so specific to this matchup on Saturday, Ohio State, a big favorite here, 19 and a half points. Do you think Michigan can keep this from getting too out of hand?
Yeah, I do believe they can. And I again, if I had to bet, Joe, I do believe they will, just because, again, the nature of this rivalry. Michigan is also much more talented than their record. The keys in order for that to happen, though, is Michigan's defensive line has got to dominate. And I mean dominate to a level where they completely take over the game. Ohio State has one of the best wide receiver rooms in the country. Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Egbuka, Carnell Tate, even their second unit is elite. They got great running backs. Will Howard, in my opinion, has a chance to go to New York as a Heisman candidate. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but has a chance. But their offensive line is beat up. They lost their left tackle. He's a first-round pick. They lost their center. He was the best center in college football. Michigan's D-line has to attack the head of the snake. They have to dominate and get to the ball before that ball can get into the hands of their playmakers. On the flip side, offensively, they've evolved as an offense. They came off their bye week against Northwestern and put together their best offensive performance of the season. They've gone with Davis Warren at quarterback. They should have stuck with him the whole year. And had they done that, I think the season looks a little bit different. Davis Warren's a guy that overcame childhood cancer, Joe. He's an awesome story. Whatever adversity he'll face this weekend, he's already beat it tenfold. I trust that guy. Michigan has to convert third and fourth downs. They're going to want to shorten this game. Part of having a 20-plus point spread is the ability to possessions. Ohio State doesn't run a hurry-up offense. Michigan certainly won't. This game is going to be a shortened game. So with that in mind, I think it's 20 and a half. I don't see it. It can happen. Don't get me wrong. It can happen, yeah. Particularly if Michigan turns the ball over. But that's a lot of points in this rivalry.
All right, let's go Wolverines. Okay, so one other college game I want to ask you about before we get your best bet of the weekend for college football. Going down in prime time, Texas A&M. Texas A&M is a 5.5-point underdog, man. They blew it last week, you know, with Ole Miss and Alabama losing. And, of course, they lost to Auburn. Now, the Longhorns, they did hit a little bit of a speed bump about a month ago. They lost to Georgia. They were not good versus Vanderbilt, but they've since followed that up with three consecutive double-digit wins here. So Texas A&M, do you think they can potentially play spoiler and maybe upset the apple cart a little bit here?
They could, and I'm really fascinated to see this because, you know, part of this is we're talking about the schedules of the Big Ten teams, and you look at Texas's schedule, there's not a lot of powerhouses. The only time that they played ranked teams, like Georgia, for example, they got smoked. So this is a really, really important game for Texas, a revealing game. And the big thing is it's going to be on the road, and what we've seen is road teams have struggled as a general thought across college football. Why did Texas lose to Georgia? I think the big reason is Georgia was able to get pressure. They were able to affect the quarterbacks. Right now, Quinn Ewers, he's been hurt all year. He's still nursing an ankle, I believe. So can Texas's offensive line establish the run? In recent weeks, part of the reason they've been able to make these, you know, win and dominate the way they are is the run game has emerged. But they also have to protect Quinn Ewers because I like Texas A&M's defensive line. I like their ability to get pressure. This is a huge, huge game. These two teams, this is a historic rivalry, Joe. These two teams have played every single year from 1915 all the way through 2011. And then we, of course, with conference realignment and the changing, we've went away. Now they're back again. And the stakes could not be higher. Texas is another team where it's like, you got to win in order to solidify yourself as that playoff team. You don't want to put it in the hands of others.
Okay, before we move to the NFL, your best bet of the weekend for college football, you like USC as an underdog.
Yes, I believe they're the most talented 6-5 team in the country right now, and I believe they've found something with Jaden Maiava at quarterback. When you look at, I've watched every game this season. They have lost games. I mean, they've given games away. It was at a historic rate how often they lost games in the fourth quarter. And now recently, since the quarterback switch, they've looked better and they've found ways to win. The fact that they're at home and Notre Dame's coming all the way out to them makes this really, really interesting. Of course, Lincoln Riley is a great coach. I look at this as a critical game in the era of Lincoln Riley. You know, we're in the middle of the season, we're talking about what's his buyout, and it's something like $100 million. Now they've gotten hot. You win this, you get to 7 wins. You get to a bowl game. Then all of a sudden, you get to 8 wins. The difference in how we'll view this season is significant if Lincoln Riley can win this game. So I actually have Notre Dame on upset alert, but I certainly think USC can cover the 7.5-point spread.
All right, let's go. Okay, so on to the NFL. One of the greatest traditions in all of sports is NFL Thanksgiving Day games. A bit of a mixed bag today in terms of the quality of the games. I think there's some interesting storylines in all three of the matchups here. So looking at everything that's available on the board today, if you could only place one bet, what bet would you be placing?
Yeah, I'm looking at that Packers-Dolphins game, and I know I'm really interested. I heard you guys talking before I came in here, and it's you see it right there, the Tua under passing yards. I looked at the weather report. It's not favorable. I mean, statistically, Tua has struggled in cold weather, and it's going to be chilly. This is an 8:15 p.m. kickoff. It's going to be windy. Your ability to grip the ball in the cold. Like we talk about Tom Brady Deflategate, why that was a big deal. Well, because by deflating the ball, you're able to grip it. There is a big advantage there. So I just historically Tua has struggled to throw in the cold. And now you have this game, 8:15 on Thanksgiving, windy, chilly. I just don't think Tua is going to go out there and be able to dominate in the passing game.
Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit. You played the game at the highest level at Michigan for the Denver Broncos as well. You talked about gripping the ball and, you know, playing in the cold weather, obviously, it's a lot different. What, if anything, and it's probably too late now, but what can the Dolphins do? You know, this is the big narrative about them is that they stink in these cold weather games. I think it's a little overstated a little bit, but if you could give them any advice whatsoever, what should they be doing here to improve in this situation?
You got to run the ball. You have to run the ball. Like the ball, the football, it's harder to grip. It also feels heavier in the cold. And I don't know the science or data behind this, but the ball literally feels like a brick. It's harder to catch. It's harder to throw a spiral. It's also harder to get in and out of your breaks. Like you get tight out there. The gloves that normally are sticky, they become slick with the cold and the frost. So just throwing the ball in general becomes more challenging. The teams that do well in cold weather are the teams that can adapt and find ways to run the ball. If you can just line up in your stance and get vertical on your double teams or get lateral in your outside zone and jet sweep action, that's how you win this game and you play ball control and clock control. So my advice, I feel great about a team like the Detroit Lions in cold weather just because of their ability to win with attitude and run the football. I mean, the Dolphins can run the ball. Look, they got talent there in the backfield. Certainly they can. But that has to be the game plan and the emphasis today.
Yeah, they had way too many three and outs in that game in Kansas City in the playoffs there last year. So hopefully they can change some narratives here a little bit. And hopefully you can still win your bet there on Tua. So a non-Thanksgiving related question I have for you. Then I do have a Thanksgiving related question for you after this. But I discussed this with my guest, John Middlecoff, yesterday. The pattern of the Chiefs playing down to the competition. Like they go right down to the wire with the Carolina Panthers last week. We saw them lose to the Raiders on Christmas Day last year. We've kind of talked about this a little bit throughout your appearances on the show, the letdown spot. And I'm kind of wondering from your perspective as a guy who's played at the highest level at Michigan and in the NFL, is that ever vocalized in any way whatsoever leading up to a game where you're an elite team, you're playing an awful team? Is that ever vocalized where, you know, we're not going to throw everything that we have at this team? Like what goes on? Anything in the lead up to these games?
Yeah, well, first off, you're right. Like this is you don't throw your full bag against the lesser teams. You save that for the better teams. And certainly Andy Reid is capable to be extremely creative, but you're not going to empty the bag in games where you feel like you have a big time advantage. The other thing is I actually think it's the opposite. Usually when there's a huge mismatch like the Chiefs against the Panthers, you know, as a head coach, you're a psychologist. I've always found it to be true where coaches will play up the lesser opponents. They'll say, hey, they'll put together a 20 play or 30 play highlight tape on Monday in the meetings and say, look at these guys. Listen, put their record aside, they're dangerous. And certainly, you know, Carolina with Hubbard and some of the things they've been able to do, this is the NFL. Anyone can win on any given week. So there's the mental side of it there. I also think for the Kansas City Chiefs, the runs that they've made deep in the playoffs these past few years, like that's emotional energy. To go out there and play in order to dominate in the NFL, even when you're the Chiefs as good as you are, you need to play perfect. You need to play to your standard. And in order to do that, you need to have emotional energy. I think the exhaustion has kind of played out this year of making deep playoff runs where maybe they're sleepwalking through the early part of their prep and then it catches up with them on the weekends. The last thing I could say is you know, maybe the Chiefs are trying new things in these games. So like you said, they're not emptying the bag in terms of their offensive play calling, but their identity's changed a little bit. This is a defensive led team. So I think maybe they're trying out different players or different schemes to find out who they can really trust come playoff time.
Okay. Something fun for the end here. It is Thanksgiving, of course. A lot of people getting ready to settle in and eat an enormous meal and then maybe some leftovers later. What's the most overrated Thanksgiving dish and what's the most underrated?
Yeah, overrated, it's got to be the cranberry sauce. I didn't realize, I thought this was just a consensus, but now, you know, I get asked this on every one of my shows and I've seen a ton of people say they love the cranberry sauce. Yeah. No way, I don't want cranberry sauce even on my plate. I don't even want to see it. Highly, highly overrated. Underrated, it's just got to be the turkey, honestly. Underrated, like no one ever says turkey is their favorite dish, but to me, a turkey that's cooked properly, if it's juicy, with a nice crisp skin to it, that's my, maybe put some gravy on top of it. I'm a big turkey guy. I'm gonna load my plate up with turkey. I'm also a big dessert guy, Joe. I know we've talked donuts a few times on here. All desserts are underrated in my opinion.
So on that note, what pie is at the very top of your pie power rankings?
Ooh, can I say cheesecake? All cheesecakes?
No, that's a cake.
Okay.
No, what an actual pie.
Apple pie. I know it's an easy nice, but it's gotta be baked in a certain way. I need a lot of crust, a balance between a flaky but crisp crust with a warm interior, and then you need like a nice clean vanilla bean scoop of ice cream with it to kind of wash the palate.
Yeah, I love those apple pies where it's got a nice crisp crust to it, a little sugar and cinnamon sprinkled on the top of it. The absolute best. Sometimes it's the basics like the turkey and the apple pie. When they are done correctly, they are 10 out of 10 food items. All right. We will leave it at that. We will let you get on your way, get back to your family, and hopefully a big plate of turkey here within a couple hours. Great spot today, Jake. Thanks for joining. Best of luck with your work with the Big Ten Network. Best of luck with your picks. And we'll catch you again next Thursday.
Thanks, Joe, man. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to the viewers as well.
Yes, sir. All right. The man right there. Thanks, Jake. What a spot from Jake. Some awesome stories. Now, I was waiting. We knew kind of the background of his story, being from Columbus, playing for Michigan. I've been waiting all year to ask him about that, and he provided some really good stuff. That story with his uncle, that's kind of crazy stuff. Okay, let's recap the bets here and let you guys get on your way. Lions -9.5. I like them to cover versus the Bears. I like Gibbs to go over his rushing yard total. Giants, ugly bet of the day, to go over 13 total, 16.5. Tyrone Tracy, go over his receiving yard total, 10.5. Dolphins, Packers, baby. Let's have a good one. Let's go over 47.5 points. Jordan Love, longest completion, over 37.5 yards. Jingles came on. He gave out Roshon Johnson to get into the end zone. Keenan Allen, 50 or more receiving yards. Rico, to score a touchdown. He likes a Dallas team total over 20.5. Jordan Love under 6.5 rushing yards. And Odell Beckham Jr., baby, a little dinky one, under 1.5 catches. Okay, so that does it for the Thanksgiving edition of the show. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. I'm very thankful. The thing that I'm most thankful for today is all of the great viewers who tune into our show every day, especially the guys and gals who hit up the live chat. So thank you guys very much for tuning in. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your families. We, of course, are going to be right back tomorrow at the regular time, 12 Eastern. We have a Black Friday game. Of course, the NFL Sunday games. Brad Powers is going to be here. We got a bunch of college football games tomorrow as well. So just an absolutely massive show tomorrow. So make sure you tune in at 12 Eastern. Thank you to both of my guests for joining today. Thank you to producer Mick, up bright and early, getting the show together today. So shout out to him. Also, very thankful to our sponsor, BetMGM. Make sure you check them out for all of your sports betting needs. They have a great offering here for the three NFL Thanksgiving Day games. So head on over to BetMGM to lock some bets in. And once again, thank you to all of the great viewers. And a special thank you goes out to all the hardworking people out there preparing meals for their family and friends to eat today. We salute you and thank you very much. Okay, that's it. Thank you guys for tuning in. Best of luck with your bets. And we will catch you again tomorrow. Let's go Dolphins, baby. Woo!